Hi guys, I'm Chanel Blackman, president of the BSA, and you're listening to Headspace, No Stress, Just Vibes, the official podcast of the Barbados Students Association at the UWI Cape Coast campus.
Hi guys, my name is Mackenzie, welfare officer of the BSA, and welcome back to Headspace, No Stress, Just Vibes, the official podcast of the BSD. Today, I am joining you for another episode, and I am joined by the lovely Destiny, our constitutional chairperson.
Hi. Say hi.
And Chanel, Madam President, once again.
Hello.
And how have you guys been?
We're in the middle of midterm, so there's a lot going on, but I'm okay.
And afloat. And you, Destiny?
Right now I am drowning in assignments. Like the other day I had one of my assignments 2 hours late and I was just like, at least it went in. I am very, very demotivated at this moment, and if I finish this semester with my name on the dean's list, I will be very, very not only impressed but surprised with myself, because right now my work ethic is at naught. My motivation is that. No.
I felt that.
And that is that on that.
I felt that.
Yep.
Hang in there, guys. Hang in there. So today marks another episode of Headspace. And we thought we would take today to really tackle a pretty touchy and sensitive subject. Today is the 21st of March. And it marks International Day Against Racial Discrimination, as earmarked by the United Nations. And on that note, we got a lot to talk about. This is gonna be kind of sort of a trigger warning, but this may get pretty graphic in terms of description and like the brutal honesty of what racism can look like in everyday experiences, so just beware of that. But just to really kick things off, I really wanted to draw your attention and the listeners' attention to the Atlanta attacks. Like, everybody's been talking about the Atlanta shootings, where 8 people would have been shot and 1 person would have been injured in downtown Atlanta. They were primarily women and primarily of Asian descent, and they would have been working in spas or like massage parlors. And it really has the world in an uproar. Like, we were already seeing a big spike in anti-Asian violence because of the coronavirus, and we can unpack how ridiculous that is already, but this we had a situation where the police were actually trying to spin this into not being a hate crime and not being racially motivated.
It was like,
what are your thoughts
on that
whole situation?
That's
ridiculous.
The most foolish thing. Sorry, but Stilter has to be off of this. This is the most foolish thing I have ever heard. Let that be somebody black son. He can't have a bad day. From the time a black boy reaches the height of 5 foot, whether he is 9 or 19, right? He is not allowed to have bad days. He ain't even allowed to walk down the street and to go to the little corner shop and come back without somebody questioning him and asking him why he on the street. We not allowed to have bad days. Lock him up, please.
Agreed. So, what are your thoughts on that whole situation, Chanel?
Honestly, it pains my heart. I'm going to try best not to cry on this podcast.
Chanel.
Because every time I think about it, and I think about this, just the whole, you know, racism in general, is like, how can man harbor so much hate? Like, God, I just think a whole lot needs to be done in the education and justice system for sure, because those are 2 of the most powerful influences we have on people, especially those now coming up. I don't think the ones now, but it's going to be very difficult. We just have to protect the minds and the hearts of those who are coming and seeing all of this foolishness, because it's scary. It really, really is.
Definitely for me, like, it hit me hard, and reading about this story, well, for those who don't know, I listen to K-pop and that kind of stuff. So it's like I consume a lot of Asian content and Asian entertainment and that kind of stuff. So seeing like people from that community actually step up and speak out about like Asian hate with the hashtag like stop Asian hate, like, you saw like how deeply rooted it is, especially because a lot of this COVID related spike in anti-Asian violence, it's just drawing on a whole bunch of violence that was already boiling in the background. And what made it really complicated for me, well, not complicated, I had to ask myself what kind of sense this could possibly make, because how do you rationalize the thought of, oh, COVID is a Chinese disease, COVID is an Asian disease, but the majority of people who are catching the virus and spreading the virus, like, even if you could trace it back to a single Chinese person, how do you blame an entire race of people for the government incompetence, for people's lack of personal accountability, lack of collective responsibility? Like, especially when you take into account the situation in the United States, like, the government has failed Americans so many times. Like, so many things have been put on the back burner. The people who needed to be protected were not protected. The economy was put before the lives of people who made the economy turn. So how do you take all of that and make that Asian's fault? And make that China's fault? Like, that has, like, the whole spike in anti-Asian violence, like, what do you gain? They didn't bring it. They didn't cough on you. They didn't spit on you. You got people getting in an Uber that's sitting on the driver, taking off a mask and that kind of stuff. But it's Asian's fault? Like, it doesn't make any kind of sense to me. So that's frankly how I feel about it. It's like, and it saddens me. It made me so, you know, the kind of angry you get when you hear about police brutality and black folk. Like, that's the kind of angry it made me. So that's where I'm at, honestly.
Let me back up a minute, because I just want to put some scientific facts in here, because you know what? We don't only go with superstition, and we don't only listen to somebody who was recently voted out of office and caused a riot and made terrorists out of people who were locals and claimed to be nationalists. We go with science over here, right? I want you to know that COVID was a zoonotic disease. What it meant is that COVID, or a form or strain of COVID, was prevalent in animals. It was an animal disease, right? And it could not be passed on to human beings. However, what we need to understand is that we share X amount of DNA with certain animals. I think we share over 60%. We even share DNA with fruit flies. But pigs, that is where we get, I think that they're used for some type of vaccine. I can't remember now if it's polio is monkeys. But we use pigs for some type of vaccine. Anyhow, pigs share our DNA. So what I'm saying is that it is totally plausible for COVID to be passed on to something like a pig, right? Or anything that shares the majority of its DNA with us, to create a disease that human beings are susceptible to. That's what I'm trying to say. So it could literally come from an animal. You're going to go and you're going to kill every... I know that y'all like y'all ribs, y'all like y'all pork. Are y'all going to kill every single animal because it has the potential of giving you COVID? Like how y'all...
Absolutely not. I like my ribs.
Huh? It is not...
I like my ribs.
This is the thing, right? You are blaming a particular type of people. Meanwhile, right, when you look in those communities, the Chinese community, the Asian community, they have so many intellectuals that chances are the same people that you blaming for the cause of COVID are the people who are working tooth and nail to get this vaccine available to y'all. You don't know.
And I think what also contributes to, like, for me, people losing the plot is the fact that it has often been people of POC communities which have been most diligent about protecting themselves and doing what they had to do, staying inside, sacrificing that. So how do you rationalize that? Like, that don't make no sense to me.
Right. And you claiming to be a nationalist and cause a terrorist attack on your own capital. The people that put you, that gave you the power, the institution that gave you the power, gave you the white privilege, you're gonna attack so? I mean, you got with privilege, so I mean the bullets ain't flying either way. I want to know, where were the bullets? Where were the rubber bullets that were present at the BLM protests? Where was
we can get to that. We can get to that.
They were planning this on Twitter for weeks. Where?
We can get to that now. Calm it down. I get you. And I feel you. And we can get to that. We can get to that. But it really is a combination of spewed hate and like a whole smear campaign against Asians meeting a disease that unfortunately started in a particular part of the world, and then ignorant people who refuse to hold themselves accountable for their own state of being.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, like, Chanel pitching, man, let me hear you.
Chanel, you're so quiet.
Because then I was going to contract, you know, earlier y'all say that, you know, they're saying it's the Asian disease. So then can we say that murder is and genocide, is that a European disease? If you're gonna talk to me with things like that, can I come to you with this?
Yeah.
Can I then
at school shootings?
All right.
Let's not go into school shootings because they predominantly affect people of color. No, let's not go there.
But they are not by people of color.
Exactly. But it ain't nothing to make it to a gotcha moment.
True.
Like you said, it wraps around a whole lot of hypocrisy and hatred.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is it? I would love to sit with someone, you know, who's openly racist and just hear why.
Would you like to come out of that ordeal alive?
No, it has been done before, Mackenzie. It's been done before.
You know, we have this certain train of thought. You know, I mean, the psychologist would say X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z honestly isn't applicable to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that me from studying science itself. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. I've always been told hatred is something that is held in the heart and it has to do with the person. And then whatever your impulse and your hatred, you know, grows. That I told y'all this topic is to get me real, real vexed. Y'all think that I'd be upset? I hear why the people told me get cross for the people of color.
Yeah.
But bless my age. But what I found funny is that we always I mean, we stereotyped Asians and Chinese, but it was somewhat seen in a positive light. It's like, oh, he's Chinese, he's smart. You know? Mm-hmm.
That's actually very damaging though.
Yeah,
for people who aren't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But y'all let parents come and turn to, oh, he's nasty. Pardon? Because if I love
not these people that are bit
exactly, if we're gonna talk about nastiness, let's go through the history books. Who taught y'all to tell it?
Oh Lord, not the shower.
I really can't. I'm on any particular race, because there are some white folks, some beautiful white folks, you know, who have hearts of gold, who hurt for us, and I can't.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that I need to just ask. Why is this man alive? And just what?
Why is he allowed to have a bad day? Like, that is my question.
Why is it always explained away or rationalized? Like, I've never understood the whole thing with humanizing murderers. Like, you just took lives and it was racially motivated. You can't stand in front of people and say you shoot 8 people, 6 of whom were of Asian descent, in massage and Asian owned massage parlors, which are usually, and we're gonna have to talk about the intersection between misogyny, sexism, and racism. Mm-hmm. Because poor Asian women have often been the butt of many jokes. They've often been over-fetishized and over-sexualized.
Many jokes talk about that, the hypersexualization of their race and the feminization of their men, so that they will come over here and marry the white men. We ain't even going to start talking about that.
And male order braids and all that kind of stuff. So like, it gets very, very, very deep and very nasty. And when you think about how that intersects with the coronavirus motivated, racially motivated attacks, like so many things converge to lead to that event. And that is being explained away as a bad day, as of being fed up, as him trying to eliminate the object of his sex addiction. Like, there's so much wrapped up in this one case. And this is not the first time something like this has happened.
Mm-hmm. Wait, guys, I got a question. Feel free to not answer it, but you should. Do you think that... because I don't think that it's natural, well, it could be, for somebody to hate a particular race or a particular type of people like that. So do you think that it goes further and it is a genetic mutation that some people from some regions have?
No, I think racism is entirely...
So you don't think it's not native, it's, versus nurture is...
I don't... If I think it comes out of nurturing. Mm-hmm. I was just about to bring up nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
Like, a child only hate somebody if you tell them you have to hate this person because of this reason.
Weird.
Like, racism doesn't just start by you being born. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody is born racist.
Yeah, but we don't want to have these types of conversations, because saying that these people are mentally ill for hating someone, I do think that they are mentally ill.
Oh my gosh.
But I do not want to explain it away. You understand me? Because that takes some of the accountability off of them.
That, and it weaponizes mental illness to a point where people who actually live with mental illnesses and they struggle with mental illnesses on the daily don't get the help that they need because of the stigma attached. Not everybody with depression or split personality disorder or bipolar disorder is going to go and kill
it's
people.
True.
Like, there's no excuse to use mental illness as an excuse, and people need to stop explaining, look, when you're wicked, you're wicked. That's all. And the thing is, it would be one thing if those excuses were applied to everybody across the mm-hmm. world, right? But let it be a black man, let it be an Indian man, let it be an Asian man, and that cannot be explained away.
Yeah, boy.
Yep.
Furthermore, we got a prison pipeline, but go off.
I think the line there is explaining the behavior versus the trigger.
Mm.
Because you could have lost someone. Okay, let me just put this into perspective, but I'm not defending anyone. I'm gonna put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
You could have lost someone to COVID. You know, your favorite person, your wife and your children, they all died because of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And in your mind, you're like, this virus never happened. Where did it start? And my goes back, oh, China. So anybody who looked Chinese, in your mind, you hate. But it's just because
the ignorance.
You're hurting. And being sad and being angry are not mental health illnesses. Those are states of emotion.
Yep. Emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions have nothing to do with your mental health. It's just a state.
Mm-hmm.
Episode, you know, it's not the whole TV set, it's one episode and you'll get over it.
True.
But people rational that into oh no, he's sad, he's depressed,
borderline, you know? Personality.
Because of that, no, he snapped. No, but he didn't snap, he's having a moment. Don't you have moments? Hello, you have moments on your period.
Yeah,
and no one no one says you're bipolar because today you cuss me out, but tomorrow you want ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about myself, by the way.
Today and tomorrow you meet hours.
You're so rude.
You meet hours apart.
So rude.
I think that's you come. You kind of mix up the emotional state and you decorate it and paint it. But, oh no, he's depressed and bipolar. No, honey, pick up a DSM, please.
True.
Please.
Mm.
Accountability.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, like, that really leads me on to like the difficulty with how this whole thing has been framed in the media. I saw this article that really, really upset me. And it was titled "How Black People Can Help in the Fight Against Asian Hate." And the reason why it was problematic for me is because I got issues with the emotional labor of fighting injustice being pelted on black people over and over and over. Especially when that support is not always reciprocated. And don't get me wrong, by no means am I saying that supporting fighting injustice should be transactional. I don't believe in that. Like, there's, if you are a decent human being, injustice should bother you, no matter who it is affecting. But for me, like, it really brought home a lot of the issues that black folks and black advocates and that kind of stuff have with the whole concept of POC solidarity. I personally don't believe in it because I think it's foolishness, but I understand the need for it. But the reason why I don't believe in it is because there's often this notion of trying to equate the black struggle to struggle and it's not the same thing. And then, like, we're always grouped together in this one umbrella, and there's not enough intersectionality in those kind of conversations that really address how other non-black people of color contribute to anti-blackness and contribute to white supremacy. So a lot of that article really, like, I was like, so we are here in a state where 8 agents were just murdered. We have a whole thing. You see people of every race pouring out, calling out for justice and that kind of stuff. And you found a way to make this about black people doing emotional labor. You found a way to make this black people's fault. And I had issues with that. So, like, that really brings me on to the next point of, like, how do you navigate, you know, the fact that you should navigate POC solidarity or going after that in a context where there's also been a lot of anti-blackness coming from the Asian community?
Well, for me, I'd be spending a lot of time on TikTok, you see. I don't know, it's like a wormhole. You go to watch one or two videos and then you just resurface like 2 hours later and you just want to be like, what happened to the rest of my life? But in viewing that, I would have seen a number of black influencers, their take on the whole stop aging hate, and they were stitching this one video where this man was like, oh, I saw all of these people, all of these celebrities came out for Black Lives Matter, and when nobody's saying anything about the Asians who were slaughtered by this white man. First of all, baby, this is not the American Olympics. Please understand that. And understand that the reason that Black Lives Matter ain't just now come about. Black Lives Matter was existing from the early 2010s, right? It only...
And it's not just an organization either. It's a movement, and people need to understand that.
It is a group of people coming together for one, like, purpose, to make sure that the black doctors do not kill our women when they're going to give birth, and to make sure that the black men are not being slaughtered by the police outside. You understand? We are not playing oppression Olympics, right? I am not going to say that you are not oppressed, because when you speak about Asian people, you need to understand that it also includes Indians. And they have a lot of Asians who are of brown descent, okay? So Asian is not really like a... Yes, it is. I guess it could be classified as a race. But when you look over in Asia, you find that it's people of every hue and every color.
You got dark-skinned Asians. Asia's not just Korea, China, Japan. There's India, so many more countries.
So much other people.
Cambodia, Thailand, so many other places. So... And it is very, very
thank
diverse.
You. So that is what, first of all, we need to be aware of the fact that Black Lives Matter is not only an organization, it is a movement. And these people have now began to say something because it was out of sheer frustration of not being heard since the early 2010s, right? I am not saying, oh, well, we're not gonna go on farm with our own little thing, and then y'all could have the Asian Lives Matter movement or whatever, because that'd be foolish for us to say, oh, well, because we had to work and get ourselves to this level, we can just ignore your plights and ignore your problems. Obviously, people will say something. However, the voices that you hear right now for the Asian people are not going to be as amplified because the Black Lives Matter movement was around. What I said before, the Black Lives Matter movement was around for years.
This has nothing to do with I'm more oppressed than you and this is the Oppression Olympics. Black Lives Matter took years to get to the level in which it is now, you know, where it is dominating the news outlets and everybody, CNN. There were peaceful protests. People were talking about it. Celebrities were getting involved. Celebrities didn't always involve. They wasn't always bailing out people when people came out to protest. That was just something that we swept under the rug. The fact that people were getting hysterectomies, black women were getting hysterectomies when they went in for simple procedures and did not know about it. Where black men were being slaughtered in the streets and everybody used to be like, Black Lives Matter for 1 week, and then we just closed that chapter of our lives and we moved on. But then George Floyd happened and then it was like, we can't take this no more. We sweep too much on the rug. I am not saying that as much black people that have been slaughtered, they need to be Asians in order for the Asian community to, you know, get together and have this type of camaraderie and have people backing them and say, okay, well, here's our issue. Here's how we are being oppressed, right? But you do not have the right to get on the people bird ass or whatever app that you're using and saying, oh, but the black people don't care because the Black Lives Matter protesters, all of a sudden they are silent. As I said before, this is not the oppression Olympics, you know, where you could go places and I do not see it as a systematic thing. I see it as a man who has, and racists who have hatred in their hearts, doing the best that they can to make sure that the Asian community does not thrive. That is how I see this thing as. Does it make it any more right? No, it does not. However, when you say Black Lives Matter, they have to. You have the prison, the school to prison pipeline for black men. You have, if they steal, well, you know they got a school to prison pipeline. They're leaving without X amount of qualifications, so it's hard for them to get a job. They go, they have children, they have wives, they have mouths to feed, and they go and they steal, let me say, a pack of bread and some jam, and they put it in the pocket and they run outside. A black man is probably going to get 15 years or whatever for just feeding his children, feeding his family, trying to do what a man is supposed to do, which is to provide. When we go into the medical field, people are told, oh, but the black skin is harder and it's tougher, you know? And when the baby's heartbeat, you listening to the fetal monitor and something's so wrong to you because, you know, mothers understand. I don't know how, but they do. I can't speak from experience. I ain't no mother. They're telling you, okay, well, if they don't have a person of color as a nurse or as a doula or as a midwife, the person is less likely to listen to them. And there's a problem. So we got women being killed in the hospital, and then outside on the street, you're killing the men as well. That is systematic. That is systematic. That is not according to what the police would have said and say, oh, he was having a bad day. Y'all be having bad days a lot in urban communities, the way that I see it. Y'all policemen be having bad days. And plus, y'all don't get a day in jail. So it will have to be something systematic. I am not saying that one life matters more than the next. I am saying that if I were Asian, that it would be easier, and I was living in America, it would be easier for me to start a business. All right, let me scratch that, edit that out, Mackenzie. I'm gonna say that. But what I'm saying is, it's easier for certain people from certain communities to come in a place and go in a bank and say, I would like a loan so I can start a business. And there's some people who are of different races that cannot. You know why? Because the system is against them as opposed to the people.
And I think what Destiny really trying to get at, I guess, to clarify for our listeners is that racism, yes, racism affects all groups of color and people of color.
It does.
And stuff, but you have to look at the degrees to which it affects people, which is why I have such a big, and I gotta bring back in my thing about why the myth of POC solidarity annoys me so much. And what annoys me a lot about these well, you did this for Black Lives Matter, you did this for Black people, you did this, da, 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 is that oftentimes Black people have done the legwork for racial justice, not just for Black people, but for non-Black people of color. Like, even if you look at, and I'm really trying to start to try to kind of localize this soon, because I know we've been talking a lot about the situation in America right now. Mm-hmm. But even if you look at the American Civil Rights Movement, like, they paved the way, Black people got out in the streets and paved the way for system overhauls and that kind of stuff that benefited not just Black people, but Asian people, for other people of color. Like, so it's like, you, not that you owe Black people your respect or whatever, so, but there are things you have to consider. So when you turn around, you tell a Black person, oh, you did this for BLM, but you silent about this. People, Black people have done the emotional, the physical, the spiritual, the psychological labor of fighting injustice for centuries. They continue to do it every single day. Even in the midst of this talk Asian hate thing, like, Black people have still been on the sidelines. They've still been supporting. They've been amplifying, which is something that we don't always get to benefit from when it comes to our issues, because people tend to speak over us in defense of us and end up, like, silencing these voices that need to be heard. But I found what the Black response is, and I don't know if it's a Black woman thing especially, but Black women tend to amplify and they protect and they, like, hedge around anybody that they care about or anybody that they see.
Sometimes we gotta start with that, though.
Yeah, we do. But I do
everything that we need to be amplifying, and we need to, because this is the way that I see it, right? You would say what you have to say, and if a Black woman agrees with you, she would be the mechanism or the vehicle for which you use to push this narrative, right? And then when
she gets most of the heat.
Yes, and then when it comes to issues that are dealing with Black women, oh no, we could see stop police brutality, right? But when it comes to the same thing that I was talking about, the medical injustices that have been done to Black women, nobody ain't talking about that.
Guys, we have to, like, you know, history repeats itself. History is like math. Mm-hmm. The equation is always, the format is always the same. This, you know, but it looks different. And let's just take it back to slavery. You know, some studies show that a lot of the rebellion and whatnot happened because women pushed. Our race survived because women found innovative ways for us to survive on the run, you know, hence the rice in the hair braids, you know, our men have been psychologically beaten down.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
We can argue that, you know, they, once upon a time, there were the Wakanda of the world, strong Black man, who's the man, you the man, you know, all my what I'm talking about, but you know, so it, you know, women, I don't want to piggyback on any traditional rules, but women have this natural knack for nurturing and caring. You just feel more, and, like, you can see potential, and you can run with it, and you can push. So if a woman is seeing all of her brothers and her sons, you know, being shot in the streets, it's obvious then she's gonna say, enough is enough. Let me see what I can do. You know, as people say, you can give a woman groceries and she's gonna make a meal out of it. If you give a woman, if you give her fire, she will raise hell, especially for those that she loved. And another point, you guys were touching on it earlier, you know, the whole segregation. Again, history, we were divided. It was like, nah, you gonna pick the cotton, you gonna wash the dishes, you my indentured brother, you gonna go fix the cars. We were separated, and in that separation, it was every man for himself. We gotta survive. Like, me and my fellow people in this field, we gonna get it together. We need to get out of this field. And there were times where we cross paths, but man has, you know, we are naturally for ourselves. It's just the way it was. You know, nomads, you were for yourself, for your survival. So if we can cross paths and we're going to collab, we both must be getting something out of it. And I think a whole lot of the, so why don't you support this body? Why don't you support that body? Because we are trying to help us. Not that we don't want to help you now in this, you know, modern age where we found ethics and love for self and others. We don't, is that, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Very much so. Write that down. That is a quote. You cannot pour from an empty cup. You're fighting your own battles already.
Thank you.
Furthermore, that is episode 9.
And I can't fight your battles and shoot your giants, because then who's going to come and shoot mine?
Mm-hmm.
You get me? So Mackenzie had asked the question, how do we come together and fight one big war? Because the root of all of this is injustice. The root of all of this is
white supremacy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to come and you're going to rally against that, do not, I mean, yes, it's okay to single out your problems, but if you are coming here to fight one big problem, be one big voice. Because the moment you split, and yeah, I know we love to say, and I believe we say, you know, blacks suffered more slavery. You can't compare that to the whole Nazi situation. There were two separate situations, and I need people to understand you cannot validate your experience or your suffering by making someone else's look small. Don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you then are as nasty as your oppressor. Don't do it.
But the problem that I got with the whole Black Lives Matter movement and people comparing it and people saying, oh, the Jewish community has forgotten what the Nazis would have done to them and what Hitler did to them. You don't see them complaining and you don't see them running up to Germans and saying, oh, we hate you because of what you did.
Oh my gosh, the ignorance.
We still got colonizer statues of people who would have oppressed us.
Don't forget that. Don't laugh.
Thank you.
No, because people were keeping noise and there was protest for it to be moved. You understand me? They paid the Jewish people billions of dollars in reparations.
Destiny, question. Exactly. Question, Destiny. What is the color of the Jewish people's skin? What is their hair type?
Girl,
what's the color of their eyes?
Religion goes
some distance, but race takes it home. Because I can be Jewish,
exactly.
I can be Jewish, but if I dress a certain way and I speak a certain way and I don't let you in to my religious beliefs, you never know.
Can't tell.
You know.
Exactly.
So then
I cannot do anything to color my skin.
But that thing, right? And then every time you ask the queen or somebody who is in power, I say, oh, she giving me you're gonna give me love reparations. She's always beat wrong the question. Oh, you tell me Commonwealth, you're giving me reparations, beat wrong the question. This woman will be about 400 billion, I don't know, 40 acres and a mule. Somebody calculate.
I don't think there's any amount of financial compensation that could make up for everything that has gone wrong in this world.
We would have to live
free. But like,
we would have to be.
But no, like, but the world would go bankrupt if they were supposed to pay black people the money that they owed them for all that. There's 4 centuries. You know, it's 4 centuries of unpaid labor.
Yep. And
listen,
like,
bankrupt people.
Just to get back on track. Like, the reason why it really like annoys me too is because if you are non-black, non-black, and you are complicit in structures and stereotypes and that kind of stuff, I think it's highly disrespectful to come and tell a black person, oh, you're not doing enough. I cannot believe, I could not wrap my head around the fact that article spun the situation in such a way where it became black people's fault and black people's job to fix injustice. Like, that's not, why are you not calling on white people to be allies, to hold each other accountable, that kind of stuff? Why is it always black labor and not just physical labor, but emotional labor? Like, it's so sickening.
Let me tell you why that is our fault and why we got, and as Black women, particularly, this is why we have to take the majority of the blame, right? Because everybody knows, right, that when you are a woman in the Black community, you are expected to be this strong figure, this matriarchal figure, and everything happens with your say. So there are a lot of single parent households in the Black community, and they are matriarchal households. You understand what I'm saying? So nothing don't happen without the matriarch say. So we raising a lot of sons. Well, not we wanna raise a lot of sons who are dependent on women. At the same time, they disrespect them.
Mm-hmm.
All because we strong. So we projecting this masculine energy all of the time. So, right? And people are viewing us such as. So every single time, because we are mothers and because we are our women, we are supposed to have this matriarchal feel and this motherly feel. So we supposed to care about everything, and we supposed to push the agenda, and we supposed to get the Black men and our sons to push their agenda. That's all they really want me to do, you know, because the Black man is not looked to as the masculine figure in let me be careful.
That's a conversation for another time. But it's true.
No, that is why they're looking at the Black women, and that's why we gotta take the blame. Because we, every little boy that dies, I'm not saying that I don't sympathize, but every person that dies, we say that could be my son, that could be my brother.
And what complicates it too is that it becomes, but we can definitely have to have an episode specifically on like the Black community in about that. But like for me, like how it became, it like I tell you, when I tell you it becomes Black women's labor, especially, and then like what really put it in perspective was how it was Black women on the front line for George Floyd and for everything. And then when Breonna Taylor came, Breonna Taylor became a meme. She became an afterthought in a hate tweet. She became, it was like, Black women will get out here and put their lives on the line, not just for people of any race and anything, but for Black men. And then still end up being disrespected to that extent. Like the kind of seriousness that was dedicated towards George Floyd's case, and how people got in the streets and that kind of stuff, we did not see that same kind of outrage at the same level and to the same extent for Breonna Taylor. And it was very, very telling. I was like, y'all were, oh my gosh, conversation for another time. I just had to say that.
No, but this conversation that we're having, Mackenzie, is all encompassing, right? We cannot speak about racism overseas or in the Caribbean in itself without speaking about the matriarch, or speaking about the role that the Black mothers and the Black women particularly play in not only the oppression of Olympics, but in the movement in itself, you know?
And yeah, and no, you bring up like racism in the Caribbean, like, because we gotta try to, you know, make it more, you gotta localize this as well. And I think, given the fact that it is International Day Against Racial Discrimination, I need people to understand, if they haven't come to the realization yet, that racism exists in Barbados and it's very real. And just because it isn't over and in the streets and you getting shoot up and that kind of stuff does not mean it does not exist. Just because you live in a predominantly Black country doesn't mean racism doesn't exist. It looks different and it exists itself different. Exactly. And I think one of the things we really needed to talk about not too, even was like
what that club name that is the that close to Browns Beach.
I wish you would behave yourself.
I'm sorry. I go say though, so I know that they're very, very racist and they'll be watching you thinking that you ain't gonna buy nothing. And yeah.
Let's bring it up, if I may, Mackenzie, zero in a bit more on what home is, you know, because it goes beyond the white people, you know, looking down on us, but people of, you know, a certain pretty hue, complexion, going, oh, you're so dark. Oh, I can't have a dark skin man. I can't have a dark skin woman.
A blackie and a white.
I can't say in our society. It's just in us. It's in us to think that anything dark,
it's very much internally
dark, is inferior. And Why is
yeah.
Guys, y'all be seeing these black men though. That's a lie.
I love a chocolate. I love a good. But there are people like that, and it disgusts me. Why? Let me just be raw for a minute. Why are you celebrating the fact that your grandmother was raped by the white man?
Oh Lord!
Oh dear! That got it's very true. Dark.
Why are you celebrating
this
that?
Is why we need a trigger warning.
Why?
It's true. That's something that we really need to speak about. And the fact that that is the reason that we've looked down on a lot of interracial marriages, even to this day.
Yeah.
We hate to see it. You understand? It's all stemmed from that. The fact that a man can't keep his hands to himself, or saying, oh,
that
because
he felt excited so that he saw her simply as an object.
Mm-hmm. Property. Get a grip. Get a grip and get it quick.
I wish the world was colorblind. Honestly,
I have to disagree, right? And why I do not like the colorblind argument is because there's beauty and diversity. There's beauty in the experiences that everybody can bring to the table. I feel like saying I don't see color is a couple.
I don't mean that sense.
Girl,
I mean as
I get you.
Judge everything based on your color. We can celebrate your blackness, but we won't say, oh, she's black, she forgot it's real good. Like, I want you to be celebrated, but not
for who you are, not just the color of your skin. I get where you're coming from.
And guys, I really got a question. I got a statement to me, and then y'all could tell me if y'all agree or not. Do we have a problem where I find that it's so commonplace now that people don't even realize that they're doing it, where people will disguise colorism as a preference?
Yes. Very much.
I thought it was only me.
And I think that's one of the ways that racism manifests itself within the Caribbean context, especially.
Yes.
Because it's very, very much internalized. It may not be black and white, but it's different shades of brown. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why you are gravitating to this person who is closer to being white. Like, there's a reason why. And colorism does very much exist. And like, even though people will say, oh, we ain't got no racism down here, racism manifests itself in class relations, because race and class intersect in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
With social stratification, and it definitely manifests itself in colorism, because the way that people treat black folk who are darker skinned is very different to the way they treat people who are lighter skinned, and you see it. You see the Oreos, you see the white adjacent. Like, I can tell you, I went to Harrison College, right? There were the white adjacent, there were the Oreos, there were the people in between. And like, you may not see it as, back then you didn't really think about it a certain way, but no, you see that they used to, people who look a certain way happen to be in a certain class, and they associated with each other. And the prejudice may not have been like outright or whatever, so, but it was always ingrained. You always saw it in the difference. Who could do what? Who went where? Who could afford this? Who could afford that? So when you think about it, you can't act like, oh, and who got away with their hair? Who got away with what they
let's
do?
Let me start.
The amount of times that people have told me that my high puff looks unprofessional, first of all, mind your business, because you ain't paying for this hair. I got $200 worth of product in this hair right now as we speak, baby. You gonna appreciate these curls today.
And then it's not sometimes. Because I straightened my hair. I had the natural do and I got the comments.
Mm-hmm.
But then straighten your hair and I did it for me. I just can't handle my hair natural. I had the time, Lord. But then you hear, oh, you wanna be white. Isn't that appropriating
Can't please
my culture? Sit down, shut up.
You ain't got no culture to appropriate, baby girl. Sit down. Next.
Oh my gosh.
If I'm gonna talk on straight hair, let's talk about my native Indians with their beautiful locks of straight hair. I hold you out here killing them.
Let me talk about the Aboriginal people who actually have naturally
Thank you.
Blonde hair,
who
have naturally straight hair. Let me talk about people like Benin,
even
like Ghana.
Even beyond all of that, the whole reason why straightening your hair and doing all this kind of stuff was a response to oppression. It was a response to make sure that you could get by in a system that was not made for you. So when people come at they come without argument about like straight hair and wigs or because it's like you just sound ignorant, you sound dumb, and I'm not gonna entertain this conversation. It's like I'd be real perplexed.
And then when we tuck away our hair, you know, the black woman always had an elaborate way of doing things, right? So if it was tied on the hair, the hair tie had to be elaborate. It was like a crown, right? When we put on with braids and when we tuck away the hair, protective styles, all of them used to look bomb. When we had our waist, we used to look bomb. All of a sudden, it's high end. I know it's fashion, you know, but back in the day when we were wearing these things, oh, she gonna fit here, that means she ain't got no good hair. She gonna tuck it away all the time, that means she ain't got no good hair. She gonna keep on this hair because she needs to maintain this job. Like, what do you want from me?
Exactly.
What do you want from me?
Let's remember the tucking away of hair became a law. A black woman could not show her hair. Right, so I have a question.
Yep.
Let's just bring it back home. How do you guys think we can move away from the whole, oh, you must cut your hair, Romario, it's too much. But ma'am, Jason here done he not. Jason is white. How do you think we can come away Ooh. From that?
We had a lot of that.
I'm just calling names, just random names. You know, how do you think we can come away from that? You know, Becky has her beautiful blonde hair down. But my good friend Destiny with the 4C curls and she bomb twist out. Your hair looks very untidy. You should put that back up. How do we get a black, a predominantly black owned school system to come away from that narrative?
I don't see us coming away from the narrative. The truth.
I could tell you what we did. Mm. I could tell you what we do to this
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I like what. Go ahead, Mackenzie.
I found like through in around 2016, 2017, there was an incident where there was this girl, she wore her natural hair. It wasn't untidy or anything though. But the principal decided she was on the backside and it made the news. I was like, well, that suit you. You are a black woman heading a predominantly black school telling a black girl with her natural hair that her hair is untidy and unkempt. That suit you. But what I found was like 2015 was the year I cut my hair and it went back natural. And like it was so liberating for me, and then like I saw like that trend start to happen, not just people cutting their hair for because everybody else was doing it, but people becoming more aware of the fact that okay, this is the hair that goes off my head, there's nothing wrong with it, this is who I am, this is hair that I can be proud of, I can take care of it, it can look great in its natural state. And I found that becoming something that was really empowering for especially black people in the Caribbean and in Barbados especially. Like, I saw so many of my friends like go back natural and decided they were going to do this and do that. Like my cousins went back natural and it has been liberating seeing it become normalized. And I think people are realizing, people in power and that kind of stuff, realizing that nowadays, this generation coming up, anything we feel like doing, we can do.
Yeah.
Like, and if we decide to normalize natural hair, like it will be normalized. If you don't want it, that's just that.
It's true. I feel like the whole generation is just like one great big middle finger for me.
Yeah, I think it's very, very deliberate.
Yeah, we just don't care. And what I like is that, and it is so proud for me to go, like, I don't watch CBC, right? But when I do pass through the living room and my parents are watching the news, it makes me so proud to see that, you know, a news anchor could wear his hair and his beard proudly on the national television, you know? Like, that's representation. That's important for us, especially for young guys. I don't know how to feel about it because, you know, I ain't a young guy. But for me, it makes me so proud to be able to see that, you know? Like, you could hold any type of office. And even with our Prime Minister, Auntie Mia is wearing her hair out proudly, you know, natural hair on all her posters when elections coming around. Those types of things make me feel validated. There's
it's
nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong. Yes.
Yes, we need representation. That's the truth. We need to see it. We need to see it in all types of offices. We need to see it on the news. We need to see it on our TVs. We need to see it in politics. Yeah,
and
you know?
I love it. I think we're finally making headway, because as you guys said, our generation is, you know, is go get it. We can do what we want. But those who are, mm-hmm. you know, in big boy positions, policymakers, you know, like the you don't know who I mean, man. The old people, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Those were the people who sat down and took a lot of it. It's like, all right, man. You ain't gonna do nothing, man. It is what it is. That's the government. Them is gonna do very foolishness.
I honestly, not to cross the road, but you can't really blame them completely for that, because every time people stand up and revolt, there is backlash, and some people can take the backlash and some can't. And you can't really blame people for that. But I definitely get where you're coming from.
Because I remember a time my grandmother was telling me of a story of her mother, which is my great grandmother, saying, you know, she would often tell them, sit down before when I get shoot or whip you. So is that kind of psychological trauma that was passed down? You know, and I think that got all of us just a little bit, because now we got this whole, you can't hit me, corporal punishment. You know, don't do it. So I'll speak for myself at least. That no longer, you know, holds us down. It's like, hit me and sit it, you know?
Yeah.
And another thing is that we are more aware of the psychological issues that corporal punishment brings, along with whatever benefits. I feel as though the issues that we have to deal with in therapy outweigh the good that the corporal punishment does. So, like, for me, right, I don't see myself in any position hitting any child, because as somebody who has studied psychology, who's been reading the journals, I don't think that is a wise thing to do, so that my child or my ward, somebody that I have to take care of, has to spend years undoing the trauma that I have passed on to them by just saying, oh, spirit rust for each other. That did not say, nowhere in the Bible did it say, oh, well, the rod is corporal punishment.
Rod. I firmly believe the rod would simply mean far,
you know,
yes,
because if you look back in the Bible, those who had rods led, and the rod was used to point in directions. So if you spear directing the child, that's hope, you know.
Thank you. And also the Bible said that back in the day you could own slaves. We can own slaves? No.
Exactly. So it's important to see how you rationalize things. And
yeah,
I don't know how we get that for corporal punishment.
No, that's a part of the black community. You know, everybody thinks that,
I get
that,
you.
You're supposed to be hitting your child. Don't do that.
But just to send me back on track and that kind of stuff. I find that I think that's one of the good spirits about this generation, that there's a defiance, and sometimes it will backfire, but it has been working well for this generation so far. And I like the fact that people are not willing, like, even with these different scenarios and that kind of stuff that keep popping up, and social issues and that kind of stuff, that young people are actually out there on the front lines, they're having a voice, they're saying what they have to say, they're calling out problematic systems, and they're not accepting bare minimum anymore. And I think with every generation, there are rising stars, there are advocates, that kind of stuff, because we would have gotten here without the people who pushed when they pushed and sacrificed when they sacrificed so that we could be here. And given that today is like the International Day of racial discrimination.
Right.
I think that it's important for us to remember that it starts at home. It starts in these small things. Like, racism does not, nobody's born racist. It's not a case where you just pop out into the world and you decide, I hate black people, I hate Asian people, that's not how it works at all. I think it starts from stemming those things at home, like exposing yourself to other cultures, to other people, getting to know other people, and forming your own view of the world outside of the environment that you would have grown up in, so that you can really, I found I could tell you from my experience on K-pop Twitter, like, I have a diverse friend group. I have a diverse access to all these different peoples from all over the world, because we have common interests, that kind of stuff. So it makes you more tolerant, it makes you more knowledgeable, it makes you less ignorant. And I find that exposure and cultural exchange helps a lot with navigating behaviors that could turn into racism if not stemmed at the front. And the thing is, with it, racism comes from otherization as well, you know, because it wasn't like, from my understanding, racism didn't just emerge out of nowhere. You had to find a way to dehumanize Black people, or dehumanize Asians, or dehumanize other people of color.
It starts in the mind, and it just starts with one person thinking that they're superior than the other.
Exactly. And you have to dehumanize somebody in order to be racist.
Yeah, but what I find that they did, particularly with the Asian community, right, is that they launched a campaign where, well, it's not really a campaign, but using big words, they would have fetishized the women and hypersexualized them. Mm-hmm. And so
emasculated
that
the men.
Yes, they feminized the men at the same time. So they made the men look like females also, which means that they were not suitable mates for Asian women. Right? Mm-hmm. Meaning, I can take care of a woman because really and truly you're not a real man. And even today, it still stands where they think that the Asian men got the look. I'm not going to say on this podcast. But you know what I mean.
We understand.
Right. And then, you know, these, and another thing is that I find that with the hypersexualization of Asian women, it goes along with purity culture. So when you see something contrary, the only thing you can do is get violent or, you know, react in a way. And I think that is what happened in the massage parlors. Because somebody's, there's something wrong with his head, and there's something wrong with him because he's racist, and it was a racially charged thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was seeing women in a different light than what he was used to the stereotype portraying.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself was, it was racially. So that is the way that the campaigns that they would have launched years ago or decades ago or centuries ago still stand today, and how dangerous they can be. So in one breath you're telling me, yes, slavery over, but we still living with the effects of it, the same way that we living with the effects of how they see Asian women and how Asian women and men are portrayed in the media in general, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Chanel?
Yeah, I agree with everything that mm-hmm. was said. For me, I think Destiny said, you know, it starts in your mind and thinking you are superior. I think mm-hmm. it stemmed from jealousy. You wanted something that someone had or these people had. And you know, the same way you came exploring, you know, you could have explored, you know,
exploiting,
right?
You
could have asked, you know, how do you do this, you know,
yeah.
And you decided, oh no, I don't like that. I don't like the way you tie your hair up. You're distracting my husband, so I'm going to tell him that your husband came on me so he could hate you. You know, they're tiny things, like, you know, tiny things that we let just grow and grow and grow and turn into this ugly monster. And if we are going to change, we're going to dial that down by a whole lot. We need to do a whole lot of self-reflecting. Why is it mm-hmm. that you are triggered when Destiny has her twist out? Why is it that you are triggered when my sweet boy from Asia makes this beautiful invention thingy, and you're like, oh, you're a nerd. Why does that trigger you? You know? why are these things triggering you? So yeah, it racism and you know, stereotypes and all those things are societal, but the society is the people, therefore it's individual. You gotta fix you.
Yeah, but what I like about, and there's another thing, like I love us as a generation because we are identifying the flaws, and this comes along with natural selection and, you know, mentality and how we take things, but we are identifying the flaws that we have not only in our community, and we are realizing the injustices done to us as a community, and we're trying to rectify them the best way we know how, you know? Sometimes it might not be going outside to protest, you know, being physical with any person of authority or any police officer, but it might be to just going in the office with brazing, or going in the office with your hair out, and that in itself would be a protest. It shouldn't have to be, but it is, and we're doing it, so I love it. I love it. Give me some more of that, please. Yes.
I think that's pretty much a good note to start to really wrap up on, because we've been going on for a while. But this has been, whoa, this is good discourse. I like good discourse. But what we can really take away from this, especially in terms of like POC solidarity, is that there's no reconciliation without justice. Mm-hmm. There's no reconciliation without recognizing that there are struggles within each people of color community that have to be addressed, that we are often, and yeah, people often frame it from the Asian on black hatred and that kind of stuff, but we do have a lot of anti-Asian sentiment inside the black community as well, and it's a lot of back and forth and that kind of stuff. But what I think is that you have to really dig that out and deal with all of that if we want to come together and fight white supremacy. And that sounds really idealistic, and for me that's why I consider it kind of unrealistic. But I do think that you can't expect black people to keep carrying the labor of social injustice when you keep pelting stuff in their face all the time. I think it's really disrespectful to
and
do
then
that.
On top of all of that, y'all think that we're trying to vandalize and cause confusion when we are outside peacefully protesting Black Lives Matter, but we ain't gonna get into that. Goodbye, guys.
But yeah, for real, like, you can't be caught. We can work together, but we do have our individual struggles, and they cannot be ignored. And co-opting each other's movements and like trying to shut each other down or make fighting injustice transactional, none of that solves the problem. Like, none of it solves the problem. So if I had to say one thing today, if I had to take away one thing from this discussion today, is that learn to meet in the middle, but meet each other where you are at. Like, be aware of the individual struggles within communities, respect them, amplify the voices that need to be heard, be accountable, make sure you are not being complicit in oppression by playing into stereotypes and anti-blackness and anti-Asian sentiment and that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
And that's how we fight the, because the whole idea of white supremacy is to divide and conquer. If you could get POC fighting amongst each other, obviously you missed the point. Obviously we missed the point. We missed who the real enemy is. So it's like, see past the petty wars, heal where it needs to be healed, so you could fight where you really gotta fight.
I completely agree. Well said, Mackenzie.
Thanks, I work hard on that.
So what's one thing you
I am taking
listening?
I feel like Mackenzie said it. We're not, and I would have said it just a few moments ago. We're not fighting each other. There's a bigger issue at hand. And we for sure need to recognize that. So anything that I'll take away from it is that it's not just about me sometimes. It's not just about my struggles. Because my struggle can play in to someone else's struggle, and me advancing could cause a struggle on someone else. You know, so it goes both ways. We have to be our brother's keepers. It's not the white, you know. It's supposed to be the human race. It's not supposed to be the black race, the white race, the Asian race. We're fighting as the human race against racism, against injustice. That's what it's supposed to be. So I'm not gonna, you know, get in my Ferrari and go and leave you at the side of the road and be like, yeah, we made it, the blacks are free. You know, you aren't free until everybody is free. Like what? So that's
basically exactly.
We're not fighting each other, we're fighting that one issue.
Yeah. My takeaway would be, I am sorry. I am very, 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 very sorry, right? But I am not a strong black woman the way that you all think that I am a strong black woman.
You don't have to be either.
Thank you. No, please rescue me. I do not want to be any person's doormat where I amplify what has been said by you all well on the same being stepped on and my issues are not being heard and I'm not being attended to. That's what I take away from. I have no problem helping someone when I see injustice being done in my own individual way, saying, because everything don't belong on social media. So in my day-to-day life, if I see something happening, I see somebody with my brother or sister from another race and I can say something, I will say something. However, I ain't no strong black woman. Do not put me on the poster to push your narrative. Not me. Next.
Exactly. And I think that pretty much sums it up. I don't think there's anything more we could really add. Like, our listeners, I'm sorry if we get caught up in our own vision, but yeah. Like, I think tonight was really, really good. I think it was really cool. I got really passionate. I think we all did. And I don't know, like, you guys can feel free to drop, when you hear this, drop your comments on it, your feedback. Tell us, like, what you thought about today's episode and your thoughts on, like, the Atlanta shooting, POC solidarity and all that kind of stuff. We want to hear from you. We really do want to hear from you. And I just want to say, like, on behalf of me, Chanel and Destiny, like, that's bad English. Oh, gosh, Chanel, Destiny and myself. That, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And on today, International Day for, no, oh my gosh, with discrimination, let's call it that for sure.
Racial discrimination.
You're breaking up, babe.
yeah.
Not the problem, and that's very cliche, but cliches work. That's why they're cliches. So you guys have a fantastic night, and we will see you guys next week. Say bye, guys.
Bye.
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 This podcast is produced using the Anchor app, a free podcast hosting and distribution network which lets you record, edit, and share your podcast wherever people listen.